Welcome to the jungle, a tremendous Thursday to you. My name is Jim Rome. What's cracking? Nice to have you here. All right, lots to get done. Live from the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Nice to have you here. Have I told you that? Let's get started. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Sometimes we have an interview in the very next segment. We do not today. Go ahead and hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Yeah, I sound a little beaten up again. You know, I had a really funny day yesterday. Thought I'd turn the corner, thought I'd beat this thing down, and then it came back with a vengeance. The sinus infection with a vengeance. A lot of pain, thought my head was going to explode, and I'll be very straight about this. I've got a vacation coming up at the end of next week. All right, and when I say my head was going to explode, I mean deep, deep pain. My teeth hurt, my head hurts, my nose hurts. You know, and it, clone, save your ats about, come on, man, don't be a punk. I mean, I get that. I understand that. Remember, I once had 4 impacted wisdom teeth pulled, and I fought a sinus infection literally for weeks. Weeks. Was going to an ENT every single week until they almost broke up the harpoon on me. So I know what a sinus infection is like. Yesterday was bad. Got some drugs, didn't help. Got some Claritin, didn't help. The doc says, hit it with a neti pot. I'm like, oh, okay, doc, I'll do that. I'll do that. Knowing full well I was not going to do that. Like, I'm not about that neti pot life. So I got home. Hit it with the neti pot. I am about that life. All right, so I may sound like garbage. Man, that's awesome. Nasal irrigation, yo. Can't wait to do it again. Beautiful plastic blue neti pot. Yo. I want to hear from Neti Nation. It works, doesn't it? I'm telling you, yesterday, and Hawk's like admonishing me like, hey, man, you got a big week coming up. I'm like, Hawk, are you kidding me? What are you saying to me, man? Are you saying I'm not going to be prepared? We're ready, man. Let's do this. He's like, oh, I know. I got you. But that was before the Neti. Yo. So my point of the story is I sound like hell. I'm not feeling great, but I'm rallying. I've got a rallying point right now. It's not the drugs. It's not the decongestant. It's the freaking Neti. I want to hear from somebody who rocks the Neti. Savage move. 1-800-636-8686. We are here to grind. Hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Also, shoot me an email at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Brian Scalabrine coming up at 40 past. He's an NBA analyst for The Vertical and NBC Boston. He has been in the NBA Finals. He knows what they're about. Brian Scalabrine joins me at 40 past. Hour number 2, Jeff Passan was in the Smack-Off last year. Not only in it, but a top 3 finisher. And a Yahoo Sports MLB reporter. In hour number 3, Chris Dolman. Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2012. We tried to run him down right before Super Bowl, and that didn't work out for a story I'll get into a little bit later on. So those are the 3 that we have right now. Short week, you want to get after it. Hit anything you want. But you know me, I'm going to start with the Stanley Cup Final. Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. It was epic. It was one for the ages. You had 10 goals. You had 4 lead changes. You had a carrot top appearance. You set the bar that high right out of the gate, it's going to be nearly impossible to reach it for the rest of the series. And yet, the Caps and the Golden Knights did it again. Now, Game 2 might not have had that same volume of goals as Game 1, but it had pure action. Lots of action. There was a classic pregame duel between the Golden Knight and somebody representing the Capitals before the game. You had a mini brawl on the ice after the final horn, and in between, lots and lots of juice. Less than 8 minutes in, James Neal got loose. Vegas got nice.
Flips it to the neutral zone, up to the line. It comes to Neal, left side, he shoots, he scores! Wait a minute. The linesman looked like he might have been signaling offside. We'll wait and see, but it looks like the Knights have scored. Wing, and Vegas strikes first in Game 1.
Thanks to Knights Radio. I mean, damn, he made that look easy. And when the Golden Knights get rolling and that joint gets rocking, it looked like it was going to be a long night for the Caps once again. But if you thought these Caps were going to go into the tank, you clearly have not been paying attention. They have trailed in every series so far, so they were not about to trip. Because these Caps are not the Caps that you think you know. They don't take a knee when they get punched in the face. They don't grip at the first sign of adversity. They rise up, and they did it again, even after they lost Evgeny Kuznetsov for the game in the first period. First, there was the goal from Lars Eller. It tied the game up at 1 at 7:27 in the first period. Then they kept the foot down when they got a goal from the legend himself.
A puck to Backstrom into the right dot. Low now to Weller. Gives it back top circle. Carlson quickly back to Nate Backstrom. Low in front. Ovechkin scores! Ovechkin on the feed on a backdoor. Short side against Fleury. The big man gives Washington the lead.
Caps Radio, the big man. 607 regular season goals, but the guy's taken plenty of heat over the years for failing to show up and show out for the Caps in the postseason. He's had that rap. We all know that rap. He's killed that rap this year. 13 goals, 11 assists, and a truckload of enormous hits. This cat has set the tone for the Caps throughout the playoffs, so it should come as no surprise that he scored a big goal last night. Now, what might be surprising was Brooks Orpik burying one.
As Vegas hit collapse, now the Caps bringing it across and a chance in the right circle. He scores! The shot from the top of the right circle from Brett Connolly. And with 10:19 to go, it's 3-1 Washington.
First goal in 220 games could not come at a better time. And when he gets one in that situation on a big stage, you start to think maybe it is the Caps night. Maybe it's the Caps season. But just as you knew that the Caps were not going to fold, there was no way Vegas was going to give in either. And they got one back at 17:47 in the second period. So 3-2 heading into the third. Vegas gets a 5-on-3 for more than a minute in the third, but they couldn't capitalize. But with 2 minutes left, they pulled the goalie. They were mounting pressure. You knew it was only a matter of time before the dam would break. And it did. Alex Tuch had a wide open look. He had a wide open net. Alvey, roll it.
2 minutes to go. And a puck up Dan Holtby watching a bad bounce out of the corner. And a shot and a save made by Braden Holtby. Oh, my! As Alex Tuch was robbed on a puck that came bouncing out of the corner. And Washington by a whisker. Still on top with 1:59 to go. My goodness, Braden Holtby.
It's so tired, but I'll say it anyway. Wait, what? Absolutely amazing. Run that back again. I still can't believe what I saw. How the hell did Holtby get all the way over there in time? How the hell did that not go in?
2 minutes to go, and a puck up Dan Holtby watching a bad bounce out of the corner, and a shot and a save made by Braden Holtby. Oh, my! As Alex Tuch was robbed.
If Washington wins the cup, that right there is going to be the reason. Because that puck was all but buried in the very back of the net until Holtby somehow got that lumber in the way and went legend. I'm not sure who was more surprised, Alex Tuch or Doc Emrick. Call it a tie for first. I'm not sure who had a better reaction on that play, Braden Holtby or Doc Emrick. Call that a tie for first. Washington's Lars Eller, quote, "It shouldn't be possible." Washington's Jay Beagle, maybe the save of a lifetime. It's unreal. Washington's Braden Holtby, luckily it hit me. In other words, about the only guy who was not impressed was Braden Holtby. But the rest of the world was, and for very good reason. Because of him, that game wasn't tied. And the series is tied. 1-1, heading back to Washington. And good luck trying to top the first two games in Vegas for drama, excitement, and hype. An incredible start to the final, and the best thing about Washington winning last night is we are now guaranteed at least three more games of that. I'll say it again. The NHL postseason is the best postseason, and the Stanley Cup final is going to be way more lit than the NBA finals, and that generally is the case. And if you would just do what I tell you to do every single year right about this time and actually watch the Stanley Cup playoffs, you would know that already. That's why I say this every single year. The Stanley Cup playoffs, the NHL postseason, is better than any postseason. But if you're not watching hockey and you don't like it, you'll never know that. But every single year when I say that, I always get calls and tweets from people saying, yeah, Rome, I really didn't buy it. I really couldn't wait to call you out on it. But you're right. It is different. It is better. And look to the start to the finals. Now, how do I know that? Because so many of you are going with your hot take about how the NBA Finals is just a rehash and a regurgitation, and it's something we've already seen before, and I'm not going to watch it. Yeah, sure you're not. I will get into that, too. I'm into it. I'm into the NBA Finals. 1-800-636-8686. Let's get to Twitter, see what's up. Cajun. At Big Cajun. WBA tweets, I'm all about the Netty. Not only does it clean the crud out of your sinuses, you get the added bonus of having the sensation that you just went swimming in the ocean. It's a good point. It's a very good point. Now, I got to admit, when I did it, and I was skeptical, and every time I heard about that process, I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Why would I do that? When I did it, one of my ears popped immediately for the first time in almost 2 weeks. I'm like, damn, that was awesome. And then I come upstairs, and Janet, I gave her what I have, of course. Passed around the whole family, and she's dying right now. And she's tough, man. Janet's like way tougher than me. And she's just dying. She's like, maybe I should try that. I'm like, hell yes, you should try that. It's great. And I watch her do it, and she got fully aggro on it, like attacked it. And she's like pouring from both nostrils. I'm like, damn, wife, you got really aggressive on that thing. I want to run that back. And then Logan CSD is like, I want some of that. Like, we're passing the netty around. I don't know. Maybe we all get our own netties instead of having to soap that thing out every 5 seconds. You know, the family that netties together stays together, I guess. Chad and Lincoln tweets, you know it's serious when you have to resort to the netty, right? That's what I'm saying, Chad. The doctor hit me with that, and she's going through the whole process. This is how you do it. I'm like, okay, doc, yeah, I'll be right on that. Second I got out the door, I'm like, hell no, I'm not doing that. I never do that. At Scott C. Veith tweets, I saw a neti pot guy at the locker room sink. Not cool, bro. Yeah, I know. I know. Hey, can I tell you, it's not even cool in my bathroom sink. At least I didn't think it was. Yeah, at the locker room, something different. But again, when you got a neti, you got a neti. And it works. I damn near brought that thing to work. That's a whole different conversation, right? You don't microwave fish at work. There's certain things you don't do at work unless you got to do it at work. He brings up a very good point, though. Where is it appropriate and where is it not? At P. Chicago tweets, sorry, Rome, but I'm not trying a neti pot until I see the results it got on the Kurt Orban test. Fair enough. Generally, I don't accept anything until Orban says it's a fact. Kurt Orban. At Great Blue Dini, 4 tweets. My throat feels good. My voice sounds good. I like my neti.
The golf course looks good. My golf swing feels good. I like my chance of...
Yours, Robo Vance. I'm just saying, without that thing, my dome would have exploded by now. I really believe that. Because every time I blew my nose, I felt like there was something in there. Capillaries... I didn't even know what it was. Something was going to explode. I definitely was going to stroke out. But you got to play through. Got to play through, right? And now I think I can because of the neti pot. All right. In addition to the NBA Finals, which don't suck nearly as much as everybody wants you to believe, I want to reset that. The Mets are literally on fire. I mean, literally on fire. How apropos. Update there. I want to talk about Inky Johnson. I tried to get to it yesterday, but couldn't do it. He is the topic of episode 39, the Jim Rome podcast. One of the best ever. I want to reset that. Andrew Luck, still not throwing a football, but my man is throwing weights around the weight room. Have you seen how yoked, how shredded this guy is? I've got an update on Andy Luck. Chris Paul wants LeBron, and apparently he's already started to recruit him because, of course, he has. That story's coming up. Tiger. Tiger was going to get right. Tiger was going to get nice at the Memorial. Sure he's not. A disaster in his opening 9. So all of that ahead. And your telephone calls. Let's do this. 1-800-636-8686. The West Coast offense on the gridiron. Sabermetrics in baseball. A team going all in with the 3 ball on the court. Innovation in sports has always given teams the edge. The same thing now goes for hiring. And nobody knows the importance of innovation better than ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is on the cutting edge of candidate matching technology. Technology that learns what you're looking for. It identifies people with the right experience. It invites them to apply to your job. Do you need stats to back that up? Here they are. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through that site in only one day. The next generation of matching technology is here. That's what makes ZipRecruiter the smartest way to hire. And you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. Once again, try it for free. The numbers are unbelievable. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. 80% find the right candidate in only one day. Find out for yourself by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
I love y'all sharing your neti pot experiences. Where were you when I need you last week? Man, I'm so glad I did that thing. I resisted that for so long. There was no way I was ever going to do that. And only out of a last gasp, bit of desperation, when it hit me last night, there's no way I'm getting on an airplane in a week. I was willing to try anything. Oh, by the way, I was swigging apple cider vinegar. Whatever it was. I was slamming that last night, too. I mean, literally, you give me any home remedy, I would do it at this point. Van Sizzle. I'll need Alvy to give me a bed of minstrel for this take. Quote, "The Capitals haveth equalized the quest for the Cup of Stanley. The wizardry of Holpe hath smited the Knights of Vegas. Thy feast of turkey legs and mead will have to wait another fortnight." Signed, Sir Andy from Denver. "Wareth Marc-Andre Fleury visiting the house of Pavin and Shanahan." Well done. Caps, not the same Caps. Used to be at the first sign of adversity, they would turtle, they would take a knee. They'd melt down. They'd go right into the tank. Not anymore. We saw it again last night. I mean, you play in that barn, and they jump on you early, the way Vegas did. Normally, that's it. And not just for anybody, but especially the Caps. They're not the same. "Dear Jimmy, a few years ago, I was floored by a sinus infection as well and explored every option. I finally gave in to the neti pot as a Hail Mary. After waterboarding myself and dry heaving into the garbage disposal, I finally felt great. It was the only thing that worked, but it was more torture than listening to a walrus call." Signed, Monty in Boston. War Lady Clones.
War Lady Clones.
Monty, you nailed it. That's exactly how that was. I ran out of things. I'm like, screw it. I'll try it. What do I have to lose? I'm only getting worse. And I'm not saying that I'm cured. I'm saying that's the best thing I've done since I got hit with this a couple of weeks back. "Dear Jim, the second best part of the neti pot experience, beside it working the first time, is when you seemingly lose all sense of what gravity is and how it works, you almost end up doing a face plant into the sink below. We're repurposing the adult alarm as the neti pot alarm because nobody wants to see them neti potting." Mike in Long Beach, you're just trying to get me to play the adult alarm again. I'm not doing it. This guy's like turning into some kind of like fetish, a neti pot fetish. Yeah, like it's crazy, man. Like you lose your all sense of gravity. It's pretty awesome. I'm not gonna lie, I can't wait to go back home and do it again. In fact, I want to do it at work. In fact, I'm thinking about doing it on the air. "Dear Jim, a neti pot at work would be totally unacceptable." Signed, Hawk's Foam Roller. Mike in Reno, "I've not touched base with Hawk and his bad back. Remember the guy threw his back out trying to put on his golf shoes. Went to a chiropractor, had a bad experience. He has upgraded to actual PT." physical therapy. And, hey, Jim, heard you were talking neti pots. You got my attention. Signed, Essential Oils Guy. Stephen PHX. Unwar people who are sick but say, don't worry, it's just allergies. Yeah, it's definitely not an allergy. I'm not allergic to anything. This is not an allergy. I wish it were. Because then I would just hit it with some Claritin and we'd be good. I wouldn't have to be fishing around for the neti pot. How about a strong telephone call? 1-800-636-8686. Hall of Fame voting starts Monday. A lot of you have been asking, are we going to have our demands met? Or we don't need demands. Just tell us already how we can vote and where we can vote. You cannot start until Monday. I will let you know then. The smack off is coming up. Yesterday, I called out Vic in NoCal, Mike in Indy. Where are these guys? Where are these two? They both won the event before. Can't find them. What are they doing? What the hell is up? July 20th is the smack off. You have to be in it to win it. It is invite only. 1-800-636-8686. How about a quick telephone call? The great state of Montana. You know, sometimes like columnists, bloggers, hosts say crap like that. Oh, let's go to the great state of Montana. I love Montana. We had a home in Montana for several years. We no longer do. I love Montana. We'd vacation there in the summertime. There's so many amazing places in Montana. So I'm going to go there right now. Jeff in Montana. My man, Jeff. Good morning. What's up?
Rome, what's going on?
Dude, where are you? Where are you in Montana?
I am in Butte, Montana.
Okay, good, good. Nice to have you. What's up?
Thanks, man. Hey, I want to reset the smack-off field a little bit. Talk about a couple guys, Vic and NoCal. Vic, you're like Robert De Niro. You used to be cool and edgy, used to do cool stuff. Now you just do movies with 20-something-year-old girls, and it's not edgy, and it's not cool. You know what we want from you? We want to hear you say, hoorah, and say stuff that you used to say that was cool, because nothing you have to say anymore is fresh. Silk Bra is one of my favorites. Love that guy. Seems like the kind of guy you want to drink rosé with and hang out with, which is kind of one of the problems, Rome. It's the smack-off. You got to have some venom. You got to have some bite. Silk Bra doesn't have any bite anymore. He's a great guy. He's like Joe Johnson in the NBA. Everybody has something good to say about Joe Johnson. He's a great teammate. You're not going to win anything with him. He's a great guy. You got Mike and Indy. Mike spitting nothing but venom. Mike's the guy that comes in and brings it all the time.
Hey, Jeff, you're breaking up. My man, you're breaking up. I'm losing you. No, you're not. That's just my polite way of getting rid of you. Hey, Joe Johnson, how'd that taste? Have some of that, Joe Johnson. He comes in and cracks Robert De Niro for not being edgy. All he does now is make movies with 20-year-old girls. Yeah, I mean, in his defense, dude, he's like 90 now. He's not going to make real edgy Ronin-type movies at age 90. In fact, my man's done a great job of reinventing, evolving. I mean, better than Pacino, by the way. And I think that's what you're reaching for with your hoorah, right?
Hoorah.
Pacino, not De Niro.
Hoorah!
And Silk, man. Silk's a guy you want to drink rosé with? I don't think Silk's a big rosé guy, brah. Hey, listen, brah. He won the smack-off. I think your point is, yeah, he won the smack-off back in the day when he had some edge. He never had that kind of edge. He's got some good off-speed stuff, Silk. He changes speeds. He'll change you up. He's good. He hits the spots. He's got good command. He's got good location. He's never going to be that guy that's going to run it right by you. My man's crafty.
Bruh.
He's crafty. He changes speeds. He hits his spots.
Bruh.
He's fearless up there.
Hoorah.
Bruh. Hoorah.
Bruh.
Hoorah.
Bruh.
All right.
Hoorah.
Really, really quickly. Silk heard that. Silk wanted in. He wants to respond. I love it when a caller comes in, cracks another caller, and then the first guy is listening and wants to respond quickly. I'm all about that life. Let's go to Huntington Beach. Silk, brah, what's up? Good morning.
Hey, Jimmy. How you doing, buddy? Hey, just was out on the catching the Big Ten out there on the side of the 11s, you know what I mean? And I'm RSVPing for the smack off. Come on.
That's not a good call. No. That was not Silk. You don't like that. That was the fake silk.
Come on.
Not a very good call.
That was the fake silk doing silk. Now all we need is the fake silk, the fake silk doing the fake silk.
Come on.
I always let the fake silk. First of all, I know the second he utters his first word that it's the fake silk. I always let him go until he gets his first, come on.
Come on.
Because it's so bad. All right, don't rack the fake silk. Man, I got my hopes up. Hawk, don't deke me like that, Hawk. When we come back, Brian Scalabrine breaking down the NBA Finals. Can't wait for that. Less than 10 minutes out. Jeff Passan next hour. Chris Dolman in hour number three. My thoughts on the NBA Finals. I'm not going to go all hot take with it and tell you I'm not going to watch it. Because I am, and you probably will too. Time now for a sports update. Here is the latest on a Thursday morning.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tiger is back. He joins many of the world's best, including Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas. As Jack Nicklaus hosts the Memorial Tournament, it is presented by Nationwide, and it's this weekend on CBS.
Tiger!
He's back. He's back to one over right now. Be sure you check that tourney out. One of my favorite events of the year. We are efforting Brian Scalabrine. We'll be joined by him any second. And by any second, I mean right this second. An 11-year NBA vet, an NBA champion, a first-team All-Pac-10 player, a Celtics analyst at NBC Sports Boston, an NBA analyst at The Vertical, and a good friend of the program. Brian Scalabrine is my guest. Brian, good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you doing?
Scal, I'm great. It's great to talk to you, and I was thinking about you and your career. Hard to imagine, but we are now 10 years out from your NBA title back in 2008. So let me start right there. Like, what kind of emotions and feelings did you have the morning of the start of those NBA finals?
You know what? It was my third at the time because I went twice with the Nets, and it gets more serious as you go, and that team was so unique. And so I wasn't really nervous. I thought I was more nervous at the start of the playoffs in the Atlanta series than I was at the NBA Finals, just because, you know, I think we were all ready. We were all prepared. We kind of, like, had our speed bumps along the way. But I think myself, as well as the rest of the squad, was really confident going into that series.
All right, so when you mentioned that team was unique, it was in so many different ways. Like, when you play in the NBA, you're always going to be surrounded by competitive guys all the time. I mean, it's just a function of the league, right? But have you ever been surrounded by as many guys who had the kind of competitiveness that you all had on that 08 Celtics team?
Not even close. And it was, you know, like, I think you can make that argument when you're on the floor. You know, this, like, hey, this team's competitive. These guys want to win. But it was nonstop everywhere you went. Locker room, weight room, gambling about, you know, how many pull-ups a guy can do. Kendrick Perkins, 50 push-ups in the snow. Can he do it in less than 2 minutes? You know, $5,000 on the line. It was like, can you make a free throw without hitting the rim? If you do, $1,000. You know, it was like that type of environment. And you just had to get used to it. And every day you had to bring your A game. And I think a lot of that, just the intensity of the whole entire team, and everyone one-upping each other, like Paul Pierce one-upping Garnett, Garnett one-upping Ray, and just going into a cycle, pushed everyone to be that elite at the end.
Brian Scalabrine joining us. You know, I wonder, since you've had success on every single level of basketball, when it's all said and done, is there anything, though, that compares to the feeling of being an NBA champion, a world champion? How do you describe that?
Well, I love the moment when I finally won one in 08, but I wish we would have won another one because I would have celebrated so much better. Like, I didn't even know what to expect. It was almost like a relief, and I didn't know what to do. But I think if we were really close in 2010 in Game 7 in L.A., I think the only thing that could top one would be to get two. Now, I don't know what it's like after 2 to 3, 3 to 4, all that, but I know that, like, 2010 haunts us as a group, me personally, and drives me more. Even now, it's like I'm not even playing anymore. just for the simple opportunities and the fine line between success and failure than winning in 2008.
God, there's so much in that that's so interesting to me. Hey, Brian, why is it that it's like this in every sport, every walk of life? You always seem to think about the one that got away as opposed to the one you cashed in. Why do you think that is? I mean, you probably do think more about 2010 than 2008, right? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, when you start looking at athletes in general, I always think, and I'm a little bit different to this, and everyone talks about, you know, when you get knocked down, like pull yourself back up, right? That's like the slogan for everybody. But I identify athletes as actually the opposite. The ones that impress me the most are the ones that succeed and, like, continue to push the next year. I don't know how those guys continue. I think that's more mind-boggling as when you have success and you're getting pulled a million different directions, you know, this opportunity, that opportunity. These people want to pay you for an appeal, like all that kind of stuff, and you get complacent. How do the greats continue to push over and over again? I think that's what separates, like, the greats from a good or a good to an average is the ones that handle success more than the ones that, like, when they're back against the wall. Like, all athletes have had their back against the wall at some point. Not all athletes have had success on a major level.
We're talking to Brian Scalabrine, which brings us to the next obvious point, right? I mean, I've talked to every analyst who's come on this show about LeBron James, and how do you explain what this guy's doing? And to your very point, this guy, I mean, sure, he's had lots of losses in the finals, but this guy gets it done every single year on a personal level. So how do you explain what he's still doing in his 15th season? And with all due respect to the guys that he's running with right now, I think that's what you're talking about, right? He continues to have these amazing habits and just keep grinding out.
Yeah, I think the commitment to his body is like second to none over anybody. And I think there'll be a shift in it. And it started to happen, I would say, about 10 years ago with sports science and stuff like that. I think LeBron just took it to a whole new level. And I think he continued to push the extremes of what he could do with his body. And, you know, like, for instance, like guys who have – you don't see LeBron, like, when you follow him or whatever, you don't see him in the gym with his workout coach or anything like that. But you do see him getting body work, and he's committed to that. So I think maybe there's a shift of, like, as long as he feels like my body is fresh and I'm able to push, then I'll be able to figure out the skill stuff later. Like, I'll figure out the jump shot. My jump shot will improve as the season. But for me, it's about health. I got to be healthy. I got to be explosive. And you just talk to his sponsors and Nike and what they're willing to do and, you know, his full commitment to trying different things out, his body work guy. I guess the number comes in at $2 million a year he invests back into his body to get what we're seeing out of it. I'm not sure most NBA players are doing that. Some guys don't even have the, you know, the resources to do that. But, you know, LeBron, and I think he'll probably take it to a new level as he continues to age. But the guy is unbelievable when you think about him playing 82. He's up. He could play this year if they went to 7 games. He could have the all-time record, I think, for most games played in the season, which is tremendous.
You know, and he gets it, doesn't he, Brian, in terms of investing in his body? Man, that's his moneymaker. Body as temple. He understands that. Now, you've made the point that if you're guarding LeBron, you have to assume the attitude of, I'm playing for my life. What do you mean by that, and how does that attitude impact the way you go about trying to guard him?
Well, you know, you can break down all the synergy numbers and what he does and what he's more effective. And as a coaching staff and group, you have an idea of what you want. Like, you know, you can't fit beat to his right hand because he'll get all the way to the basket. But on the left, you know, there will be more help. So let's shade him that way. But at the end of the day, I think late in the game, that's where it becomes like life or death because he's got a great amount of shooting around him. And when you're on him, you know that, like, the shot is used to be he couldn't do that, but now he can. So, you know, like, you're at his mercy. And then the only thing you can really do is bring two over, which really compromises the rest. So because of his ability to pass, what can you really do as far as one-on-one coverage? So it's just at that point, your back is really against the wall.
All right, so in terms of Golden State, when you look at the Warriors and you see how careless – I mean, almost bored that they are for extended periods of time, and then they can just lock in and blow teams out in the third quarter. When you see that, what do you think?
Well, I know they're supremely talented. Yeah, no question about it. But I think that's a little bit playing with fire against a team like Cleveland. Like, I remember last year in the finals, besides game 4, it looked like they were relentless on beating the Cavs from what happened last year or the year before. Now, are they driven the same way? They got at times you're scratching your head, and maybe Houston sort of created a formula for beating the Warriors. And you know, Iguodala being out is not going to help them at all because they need multiple bodies to throw at LeBron. I mean, they do have guys that can throw at him, but I don't know why they let go of the rope so often. Maybe because they know that the runs could be a 12-2 run in 2 minutes, and they know they can make up for that. But it is their only flaw as a team that's, like, you know, questionably one of the greatest teams to ever play, is how careless they are at times on the floor. And I was younger back in the day, but I don't remember Shaq and Kobe's Lakers or the Jordan Bulls ever being like that. But, you know, maybe if I watch now, it'd be different.
You know, I wonder then, if you're Steve Kerr, and Steve Kerr played for those Bulls teams, if you're Kerr, how concerned are you about the fact that they have gotten into a habit where they do just enough to win, but not that much more than that? It's not like they play 48 minutes every single night or really any night at this point. Is there anything Kerr can do to shake them out of that?
Oh, man, Jim, that's a good question. I think maybe you should ask Steve Kerr that. I don't think he has an answer. If he had an answer, wouldn't they have played better in the Houston series?
Sure.
Because then how many times did the camera pan on Kerr and he looks super frustrated? A guy who's like, Joe Cool, no tie, I'm in Golden State, it's the weather's great, I'm in the Bay Area and all this other stuff. But he looked very nervous during that entire series every time they panned to him. Maybe that's just great camera work on the guy's part, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think as a coach, that's got to be the most frustrating, no matter what level you're playing at, right? People not taking the game seriously. I just think, like, in high school, I think coaches could see that, AAU, for whatever level. But you're talking about one of the greatest teams ever, and to have the ability to be where they're at right now, yet have the lapses that they do, it just reminds, or at least for me, it reminds me of, like, how superior their talent is to the rest of the league.
See, I think they know that, right? And that's why they do what they do, because they know it's going to be fine. They know they can drop that 12-2, 18-4 run on you at any given time. They know they've got that much more talent. I think, why does anybody do anything? Because they can, and they do. Brian, let me ask you about the Celtics. When you look back on the season the Celtics had, and everything they went through with the injuries to Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, they go all the way to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. They nearly win it. As you look back on the season, how would you sum it up?
I think we learned a lot as from, like, an NBA analyst standpoint, what young players are capable of doing. I would have never, ever in a million years, I probably did go on record at one point and talked about it will never happen again what Magic Johnson did when he was a rookie for the Lakers, like what Larry Bird did when he was a rookie. Like, this environment doesn't exist because, you know, guys are just like, you know, Jason Tatum, 2 years removed from high school. How can you be in the NBA and have an impact like that? Even LeBron, and LeBron's an all-time great. How his impact his rookie year was a fraction of what, like, a guy like Tatum is able to do. And, you know, so I just feel like, how is this possible? Maybe it's because the game is changing right before our eyes, and it's more team basketball versus individual basketball, and maybe guys who have played high school, AAU, college, and in the NBA, the difference is not as much as it used to be. Remember, like, college was one style, NBA was another style. Man, like, these are all being blended in together nowadays, depending on your coach and your personnel. So maybe that's all the reason, but I was, like, completely shocked this year by what Mitchell did, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Ben Simmons. I am, like floored by how good these guys are at a young age. And it's not just athleticism. It's being able to play through contact, which we used to think it took, like, 3 or 4 years for you to be able to play through contact. Guys are coming fresh out and able to do it. And I don't know, man. I'm going to be really hesitant to say, like, young players don't make an impact from here on out.
Oh, I think it's such a good point. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And Tatum, I mean, Brian, 2 years removed from high school, and not only to play the way he did and physically to deal with that contact, but, man, the guy's composure and his ability to hang in the moment on the big stage blows me away. I got about a minute. I mean, is there any reason to think that he won't be a superstar? And then how does he fit in when the other big two come back next year?
So if you're watching the NBA Finals or NBA playoffs, you're noticing, like the big men are becoming dinosaurs, man. They're, like, not even playing at times. So basically the Celtics right now have 8 good wing players, wing skill players moving forward. So I could totally see an 8-man rotation. or even going 9 or 10 with a big playing periodically. But at the end of the day, skilled players that can shoot, defend, and score is what you want. Celtics got a load of them.
Brian Scalabrine, an 11-year NBA vet. He is an NBA champion, an NBA analyst at The Vertical, also a Celtics analyst at NBC Sports Boston. Brian, so good to have you on, man. Really appreciate you. Thank you very much. You're the best, Scal. Brian Scalabrine, just nailed that thing. He is a pro. All right, we're coming back. Hour number two. It's going to be a good hour. You have your telephone number. Coming up next hour, Jeff Passan. Hour number three, Chris Dolman, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2012. See you on the other side. Do not go anywhere.